Hello and welcome into the KE Report. I'm your host, Shad Markowitz, and I'm speaking today with Craig Hemke, founder and editor of tfmetals.com, and we will have a link to that below this interview. And it's always great getting Craig on the show just to get your thoughts on the macro environment we find ourselves in with the Fed, with rate hiking cycles, with the dollar, with the markets, and of course, our favorite sector, the precious metals, and how that relates to what investors are looking at for their short-term, medium-term, and long-term investing goals. So, Craig, I guess let's start it off with the state of the environment. It seems like the economy is definitely slowing, and the Fed is going to be hitting a pinch point here in a while when they continue with their rate hiking cycle. What do you make of it? What kind of environment are we in here?
Well, I guess the first thing that comes to mind is listening to you introduce things, and it's always good to speak with you, Shad. Is that old phrase about picking up pennies in front of the steamroller? Probably everybody listening to us has heard that used, that metaphor at some point. Like I said, that just came to me out of the blue as you were speaking there a moment ago, in that this week I bought another couple ounces of gold. I took a little money and put it into my Schwab account, bought another 500 shares of First Majestic at $8, because I thought that's probably a pretty good deal. And I'm not too worried about I got to make sure we get this price right or put in a limit order or something like that, because those are the pennies in front of the steamroller. I'm more concerned with that macro you mentioned and where this is all headed in the second half of this year and in 2023, which, as we discuss almost every single time we speak, you know, I covered pretty extensively in my forecast that I wrote back in the first week of January. And the year has played out pretty close to how I thought it would play out. And we're now about ready to wrap up the second quarter. The latest numbers out of the Atlanta Fed, where they construct that GDP now model, have the second quarter now only at 1.3% growth, if you want to call it that, down from twice that about 2 or 3 weeks ago. Even if it does come in at 1.3%, you aggregate that with the first quarter of negative 1.5, and for the first half of this year, the economy is already contracting. And the Fed is doing their normal song and dance of spin and mope, management of perceptions, trying to create an environment where they can hike Fed funds, one, so they have the room to cut it in the future, but also, you know, that's the only thing they can do to try to control this inflation monster. And they're doing it in the face of what is already obviously a sharply slowing economy. So it's going to be very interesting in the back half of the year. They're going to have to make the choice, and the choice they will make is to try to keep the plate spinning economically and in terms of markets and liquidity. Gold may already be sniffing that up. We're already a good solid 4 or 5% off those overnight lows that we saw, 2 weeks ago last Monday, so about 17 days ago. And I think we spoke about this 2 weeks ago the last time we spoke. I think your risk reward is heavily skewed to the reward side from here on any precious metal that you buy. And again, that's why I'm not too worried about the pennies. Yeah, I'm thinking more big picture.
Well, that makes sense. And I think sometimes it's nice to be reminded not to get stuck in the minutiae or the little tiny wiggles and squiggles, which are the pennies in front of the steamroller, because the bigger picture is still showing that there is trouble on the horizon, not just in the general markets, but the pickle that the Fed finds themselves in. And we've talked about this ad nauseum, but there's a lot of people, Craig, that I still don't think get the proverbial corner they painted themselves into, because they clearly want to fight inflation. Biden had them come in and chided Powell to go ahead and fight this inflation. And they are starting this rate hiking cycle way late, way behind the curve. But the reality is they're never going to get the Fed's fund rate up above where the inflation rate is. Even if inflation was to temper and come down from 8 to 7 to 6%, they're still way behind. And even if they did a couple hundred basis point hikes, they'd still be negative real rate. So there's a point where they're inflicting some market weakness to kill demand, to hopefully fight inflation that way. But there is a point where they're going to have to stop raising rates because of the national debt levels, because of the debt level they carry on their balance sheet. And at that point, there's going to be a gotcha moment, a tipping point. So could you maybe expand on how you think that may play out or what you're looking at in regards to that moment of truth that they're going to reach probably in a few months?
Well, you know, first and foremost, nobody ever talks about the fact that prices are 10 to 20% higher across the board than they were a year and a half ago. I mean, the Fed's only talking about getting that rate of inflation down, like you said. But that doesn't mean, you know, you go back from $5 to $4 for a pound of hamburger, right? They're just trying to get it to where hamburger goes to $6 a little slower, Okay. And that kind of gets lost in the shuffle. And so you have this tremendous economic discord that's getting set up. I despise Jamie Dimon, but he was right on yesterday calling it an economic hurricane that's coming that nobody realizes. And I'm sitting here at my desk here at the global headquarters of TF Metals Report. And behind me, I have my bookshelves. And one of the books I just took down this morning to reread is called When Money Dies. And this book was originally written in 1975. It was updated in 2010, right after the financial crisis and QE began. And man, it was a hot, hot book to have in 2010 and 2011 as everybody was reading about Weimar Republic and all that stuff. Now, everybody knows, we didn't get into a hyperinflation environment then because most of those dollars that were created to reinflate the balance sheets of the banks all got quarantined on bank balance sheets. But that's not the case now coming out of COVID, obviously, now going forward either. It's funny, this book, I'd encourage anybody, if you've not read this before, man, the time is now. Again, When Money Dies by Adam Ferguson. And in my copy is a paperback copy. You can probably hear me shuffling the papers right here. It begins, page one, note to the 2010 edition. And when this book was first published in 1975, as the prologue observed, comparison of contemporary prices and values with those of half a century earlier was of limited advantage. However, as we are in the current date, it does. It goes on page two, and I'll just read this to you. Again, this is from 2010. At any rate, it's not hard to contemplate a recurrence of the challenging post-oil shock conditions of the 1970s, which inspired this book in the first place. Back then, there were rocketing prices and wages, strikes and closures, unemployment, helplessness and hopelessness. In 1975, U.S. inflation stood at 8%. Does that sound familiar? Britain's was rising from 10% to 27%. What's the latest German PPI, like 40? And then even Japan saw inflation rising. All of this is now what we're happening, okay, in 2022. And the situation is far more dire economically. The debt bubble is far greater than it was 12 years ago when people were first worried about this. And so, I think a Shakespearean phrase is what is past is prologue. It really is time. If you want to be ahead of the curve and prepare yourself financially, economically, everything else, to reread about how things went down in Weimar Germany in 1923 and beyond. Hey, maybe pick up the book this weekend. Amazon probably ship it to you in about the next 15 minutes if you ask them for it.
I think that's a good book recommendation, Craig, and a nice plug for Amazon there. Hopefully we'll make Jeff Bezos a little richer. And I'm pretty sure that the TF Metals secret headquarters is in an underground lair in a hauled-out volcano, correct?
So that is correct, yes. Yeah. And all of my physical metal is within arm's reach at the bottom of the river that is 100 feet deep that runs out the back here. And, man, is it prone to flooding. But anyway, look, I don't know. There's probably people listening to us. Yeah, these people are saying the same crap now for 12 years, blah, blah, blah. Okay, sure. Yeah, but I've also said for 12 years that not only is this unsustainable, you can't know when the moment is coming when the plates will stop spinning. I mean, they've been able to keep it going for 13 years now, since 2009. But we are very close again to this moment when the precious metals just absolutely take off, even within the current system. And then what I'm getting at is in 2010, again for the first half of 2016, then again in 2020, you got a peek behind the curtain and it was revealed what, charlatan and liars these Federal Reserve and all central bankers are. And that's when you had this loss of credibility, as they call it. And everyone went, wait a second, there's no turning back. There isn't. And that's when all of a sudden the global investment world, all the hedge funds, institutions, endowments, and everybody suddenly just start to turn a little tiny bit of attention onto the precious metal sector and everything just explodes to the upside. This next time, again, even within the current system, as that curtain is pulled back and that attention gets paid to the sector, I'm not sure it stops. I mean, fool me once, fool me twice, right? All that kind of, how about fool me four times? Okay. And again, so it just draws me back to that initial metaphor. I'm not worried at all about whether gold today is 1870 versus 1830 early yesterday. I just want to make sure I have enough mining shares so that I'm prepared for this, really, what is an eventuality.
Well, Craig, let's address the 800-pound gorilla in the room, which is people stopped believing that we could see inflation after the 2008-2009 Great Financial Crisis, when that didn't happen, when we didn't see Weimar Germany hyperinflation. And there were a lot of people trumpeting that message back then, to your point.
Oh, me
and
too.
Then we hear people also talk about the 1970s and the stagflationary environment. And a lot of people poo-pooed that even up to a couple months ago. But, you know, we were talking about this a year ago, 2 years ago, that we're setting up for a situation where we're going to have higher inflation, which was obviously going to affect the commodity sector. And energy is a huge input on everything, whether it's freight, shipping, the cost of goods. Those grocery store foods don't get there by themselves. They are shipped there on trucks. And it also affects the travel industry. It affects airlines. It affects cruises. It affects a lot of different things. And it's a tax on everything, high energy prices. And when people laughed at that, said, oh, you guys have been saying the same thing for years, now inflation is here. Nobody's laughing at 8.5% inflation. Nobody's laughing at the cost of goods being up double digits, as you mentioned. And I think it's a boy that cried wolf scenario, Craig, where people talked about the wolf coming, People got desensitized and said, that'll never happen. Well, now that it's here, you know, what would your message be to those people that are maybe scoffing at this idea and still think things are going to return to normal?
Yeah. Again, you mentioned trucking and energy costs. I think just that alone should be enough to get people's attention and make them realize that the world in 2022 is a whole different animal. We've been going in this direction. Obviously, all the COVID stuff kind of guaranteed this outcome 2 years ago. But just on that one point alone, Shad, I'd like to get people got to understand what's going on here. If you would, I might ask you to post a link to something I wrote back on Tuesday about the diesel fuel situation here in the U.S. I write something every week for the nice folks at Sprott Money, and then they distribute it for me. So it'll be a sprottmoney.link if you don't mind posting it. And in the U.S., I think most people know, you know, gasoline and diesel fuel and jet fuel, if you tried to book an airplane trip or anything like that, are just soaring. And the problem is on multiple levels. Not only is crude oil, you know, $116 a barrel, but refining capacity in the U.S. has shrunk over the last several years. And when you have a molecule of crude oil, that baby can only be cracked once. And you've got to make a decision at that time if you're going to turn it into diesel fuel or gasoline or jet fuel or whatever. You can only do it once. And so if you decide to make more jet fuel, then you're making less gasoline and diesel and, you know, vice versa around the horn. And so we have a real problem here. On top of that, in the U.S., where these diesel shortages and diesel is now $9 a gallon on the East Coast and the West Coast in some spots, there's an additive that has to be used in your truck, in your, you know, the actual tractor part, the Peterbilt part that you see on the highway pulling the other 14 wheels or whatever it is. That's called DEF, diesel emission fluid. And for about every time you fill up your tank on a truck, you got to use about 7 gallons of this DEF. Well, hell's bells. Now, all of a sudden, the railroads that are in charge of the logistics of shipping that stuff off, they're all behind schedule and can't get DEF to the major truck stops. This is all included in this link that I wrote this week. So, and if you have a rig that you bought after 2010, it won't run unless you add that DEF. And so if there's a shortage of that stuff, which is, you know, mainly a supply chain issue, then the trucks just stop running, idling. They just sit. I mean, this is a major, major problem that's building, that's going to come to a head over the summer. So again, no 50 basis point rate hike fixes that. And if you're out there, you know, with your head in the sand thinking, everything's just fine, I'll just go to the grocery store and buy more asparagus, that's not where we are. And again, no central bank policy fixes that. And that's just one part of the problem, Shad, as we've discussed. So that's a long answer to your short question about how do you tell people that, you know what, yeah, I too was squawking about all this stuff in 2010-11. It hadn't happened yet. But boy, do we ever stand on the doorstep of it now.
Well, and maybe we can just wrap up with the idea of stagflation, how it was dismissed. But we have two or three of the components in there, almost like the keys to a lock, but there's still one component missing, and that's the labor. We haven't seen massive unemployment. So in the 1970s, you had the high inflation around 8%, check. people make the point, yeah, but that was coming down from even higher inflation. So what? The point is, we're having inflation and we haven't seen it in decades. So people are not used to it. And they're finally now just adjusting their inflation expectations. High energy prices in the 70s, high energy prices now. Check. And slowing economy, even if you're right that the GDP now forecast is 1.5% after a negative quarter last quarter and a kind of a muted quarter this quarter, we're not setting the world on fire with record growth. And it's unlikely the growth is anywhere close to where inflation is still. So the reality is, check, we've got another thing on stagflation. But Craig, I'd love to get your thoughts on whether we'll start seeing more companies squeezed by inflationary pressure, squeezed by all these pricing issues, and if they may have to start letting some folks go, and if we may start seeing that final component of the lock, the unemployment side of things.
Yeah, the Fed seems to be fixated on that, the JOLTS job openings data. Right? That, oh, the labor market is robust and strong because look at all these job openings and that sort of thing. God, Shad, I'm sure you've seen this. Anybody listening to us, you gone out to dinner lately, right? And you had to wait because one third of the tables in the restaurant aren't even open because they don't have enough serving staff. And you look around, you're like, well, where the hell did everybody go? I mean, how can there be all these job openings? And I don't know where they went.
They're all trading meme stocks, Craig. They're all trading NFTs and cryptos, and they all got rich, and now they're all retired.
I guess so. Because, you know, because some would say, well, see, that's a sign. There's so much more supply of potential jobs that you don't have this wage price spiral at all. And that's a critical component to all of this, like the 70s. I don't know, man. I'd look at it another way. You see this, as you mentioned, companies getting their margin squeezed and having to maybe start laying people off. Because they got to pass along either those expenses or they got to, you know, to the consumer who maybe becomes unwilling to bear that, or they got to eat it themselves and trim their own costs. You do that by demanding your workers be more productive and, you know, and hiring less of them. But then you also see reports on the news about, you know, small employers. I saw one last night about it. I think it was on the NBC Nightly News about a lady that runs a delivery service or has a, you know, they have to hand deliver all their products around town. And the people that she pays, she has to give them more money and give them gas cards because, you know, gasoline's twice as expensive as it was 2 years ago. And so is that a part of your wages that are going up, you know, in kind of a hidden way? So, again, who am I? I'm just a dope with a MacBook. But my college degree is in economics, so I have at least some rudimentary understanding of all this stuff. And I'm just, again, at the end of the day, convinced that we're in a stagflationary environment, just like the 1970s. The Fed is trapped. They're going to have to pick one or the other, fight inflation or try to keep the plate spinning. In the end, they'll choose to keep the plate spinning. And as people come to understand that, man, are we in for some kind of a rush in all commodities, in all hard assets, not just the precious metals. And I think it's one that is really going to blow your mind, even within this current pricing system as it gets going. So, look, it's hard to watch. It's exhausting to watch. But boy, I would sure be using this time to prepare for all of this stuff. And it's going to be a crazy back half of this year and into 2023.
Well, we'll absolutely continue to see more volatility. We are setting up for the hurricane that Jamie Dimon had mentioned. And this seems to be that dead cat bounce we're seeing in the general markets is giving people that false sense of security, kind of the calm before the storms. So before the hurricane comes, hopefully people will mull that over. Take a look at the book that Craig recommended. I'll link that article below that he mentioned about diesel fuel and also link a hot link over to the tfmetalsreport.com site. Craig, thanks for spending some time with us here at the KE Report and looking forward to our next conversation.
Shad, it's always a pleasure.